Welcome to Two Way Street. On our show today, we're going to continue an annual holiday tradition. Every year on the weekend before Thanksgiving, we present a roundtable conversation with some of the most acclaimed chefs in the Southeast. The group changes every year so that we can always offer you new ideas for your holiday table. This year, we've brought together a truly remarkable group. You're welcome to wear headphones, or you don't have to. So it's kind of up whether you like it or not. You like it?
You can do one on, one off.
Steven's being very hip.
Annie Quattrano is probably best known to Georgians for her game-changing restaurant, Bacchanalia. Since it opened in 1993, it's remained one of the top destinations for fine dining in the South. Her commitment to using organic, locally produced foods pointed the way for many chefs who followed her here in Atlanta. Annie operates several other celebrated restaurants, and as you'll hear, she's the proprietor of Star Provisions, a casual cafe and bakery on the west side of Atlanta. She has a fistful of nominations and semi-finalist placements for the prestigious James Beard Award. Do you do Thanksgiving or not at Miller Union?
No, we're closed.
Okay, I thought so, but I just wanted to check. Steven Satterfield is the co-owner and executive chef of Miller Union, another of Georgia's most acclaimed restaurants. He's especially well-known for creating fresh takes on traditional Southern classics. Steven's the author of Root to Leaf, A Southern Chef Cooks Through the Seasons, a book that confirms his commitment to elevating produce in his menus. He, too, has a number of James Beard nominations under his belt. Jared Steber's one of the young upcoming chefs in Atlanta. He's become known as the pop-up king because rather than operating his own establishment, Jared's been invited to take over restaurant kitchens to prepare his own meals. No Thanksgiving pop-up somewhere, Jared?
Pop-up on a couch somewhere.
Yeah. His pop-up Eat Me, Speak Me, which he runs three nights a week out of the Little Five Points restaurant Gatto, has become wildly popular. Jarrett was a semi-finalist this year for the James Beard Award for Best Chef under age 30. Sarah O'Brien was a Beard nominee this year, too, for Best Baker. She runs Little Tart Bake Shop, which some food writers have called the best bakery in Atlanta. We brought the whole group into the Two Way Street studio a couple of days ago for a casual conversation that felt to me like what I imagine would be the way that chefs socialize and talk to each other when they get together late at night in someone's kitchen after each of their restaurants has closed. Are you ready?
Is everybody's mic on?
Annie, I want to start with you if I can, and then I want to bring everybody in on this conversation. You grew up in New England, right?
I did.
And moved south later in life. You worked in New York for a while before you came down here. Help me understand, what were your New England Thanksgivings like when you were growing up?
A lot like they are now, because we still prepare all the same food. I don't know. It was a colder time of year. Never was 80, that's for sure. But no, I think, you know, New Englanders are very traditional. And I find that that's still kind of what I adhere to, is the traditional Thanksgiving. My grandmother on my father's mother did all the cooking. There were often Italian feasts that we went to, but they weren't in our house. She was very traditional New England Thanksgiving. And so that was turkey and very elegant cranberry molds and the mashed potatoes and gravy. It was the real deal.
Who cooked in your house?
She did. My mother didn't really cook, so my grandmother always prepared that meal completely.
Were you in the kitchen? Were you
watching
her and helping her? How did you help her?
Yeah. In any way. I mean, I really idolized her. She was like, she was stylish, and she had this amazing collection of really beautiful china. I don't know. I just liked everything about her. And I was her helper. My mother, like I said, didn't really cook or care to. So
you grew up there, but then you came down to the farm up near Rome, right?
Yes.
And when did that happen?
1992.
Okay. Which was where your grandmother was cooking at the time? Was
my
it her,
mother.
Your mother.
My mother grew up there, yeah.
Okay.
We moved to where, you know, my mother lived there for her first 7 years on the farm, yeah.
Okay. Do you have a favorite at Thanksgiving time?
Yeah, always the dressing, I have to say, is my favorite. Well, I mean, what could be bad about butter and some onions and more butter? Chicken
Who else?
Stock.
Who else? Tell me about Thanksgiving memories. Stephen, you were in Savannah growing up.
Yeah, and we had Thanksgiving kind of, tended to have it more up in Atlanta because my dad grew up here and my grandparents lived here at the time. So we would come to their house, and it was a big family gathering. We definitely would have anywhere from like 15 to 20 people. My grandmother did most of the cooking, and it was a formal affair, really. I mean, we sat down, you know, to the finest china that they had and all their crystal glasses and everything. It was much more, very different than the way we would eat at home. So it always, I mean, we had to eat, even like wear a jacket to
wow,
dinner.
Wow.
So
like
it was
that.
It was a different kind
like
of experience.
Like the Greenbrier.
Yeah, but it was fun. It felt fancy.
Did you help in the kitchen in those days?
No, not at that time. I mean, and Thanksgiving for my family has evolved in a very different way. At this time now, we gather at my sister's home, which is in Norcross. And we all contribute to the meal. Everybody brings something. And, you know, the people that we know aren't as good of a cook, so we might tell them to bring an appetizer, like a dip or something. No, I'm just kidding.
I just thought of that. I wondered if you're in Stephen's family, and you know he's one of the most celebrated chefs in the South, what would you dare bring to put on the table with
some people are in charge of bringing wine, you know. No, and I like to cook Thanksgiving. I usually do about 3 vegetable sides. I deep fry a turkey. Sometimes I'll make, you know, cranberry sauce too, because I don't like, I think my family is kind of lazy and sometimes opens a can of cranberry sauce, and that's just not acceptable to me. So,
okay,
sorry,
so
guys.
I have already heard 3 things I want to come back to in a little while. One is your deep fried turkey, mm-hmm. Also your cranberry sauce, and Annie, you talked about dressing. And so as we go on in the conversation, if we can, I want to come back and ask you about, have some tips for how our listeners can make those the best way possible. Sarah, you grew up in Ohio. Let me ask you this. In our house, Thanksgiving is the most special holiday of the year. We happen to be Jewish, so we don't do Christmas. Nevertheless, I think there are a lot of people for whom Thanksgiving is the most special day. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely, it's my favorite holiday. And it was always, after I went to college, it was always the holiday that I made sure I came home for. Like, I would maybe travel over Christmas, and when I lived overseas, I wouldn't come home necessarily for Christmas, but I really wanted to be home for Thanksgiving. We always had it at my parents' house on our farm in Ohio with my grandparents and my 3 siblings. And it was really, I was thinking about, because of this show, I was thinking about who did the cooking when I was growing up, and I realized it was very collaborative, with my father doing the turkey and my grandma doing the desserts and my mom doing all of the sides and the appetizers, until I got really into cooking in high school and got kind of tyrannical, and then I would make lists for everyone and decide what we were cooking, and now I've kind of taken it over a little bit in my family, but they seem to be
did
okay
you
with
gravitate
that.
You've told a story before that your grandmother gave you a rolling pin, and that sort of started you on your journey to do pastries and pies, but did you gravitate that direction anyway back in the day when you were in the kitchen at Thanksgiving time?
I did, yeah. But I mean, I was 10 years old when she gave me her rolling pin that I still have, and just came over on my birthday and said, you're going to learn how to make pie. And that's really where I remember falling in love with pastry and with baking. And that's what I want to do all the time. But I got a lot more interested in French baking. But Thanksgiving's always been a really nice thing for us at Little Tart, because we focus so much on laminated pastries and French style tarts and things all year. And then, but so many of my bakers love making pie. They have some familial connection like I do to like remembering making pie with their mom or their grandma. Or
what
something.
Is a laminated pastry? What does that mean?
That means that's where you layer dough and butter and dough butter to kind of create steam. Yeah, lots of butter to create steam in the oven to get something like a croissant or a Queen Amman or a puff pastry or something
okay.
like that.
Jared, you grew up right here in Atlanta, and you had pretty big Thanksgiving dinners often at your family's house.
Yeah, they were definitely unusual. We would usually do kind of like my mom would call it orphans giving. So she would basically just invite anybody that she wanted from either the neighborhood or friends of ours, especially after my sister and I had both kind of grown up and left high school, and we had friends who were either, you know, college friends in her case, or for me, you know, cooking buddies, colleagues, that kind of thing. If they had family that was somewhere else in the country, they couldn't get home for Thanksgiving, they would come over to our house, and we would always just have this weird mashup of usually my sister would come back in town, and then it would be, you know, me, our significant others.
Your father is from
Romania.
Yeah. So does that have any impact on what is cooked at a Thanksgiving meal?
Yes, because he's Romanian. He, you know, fled when the country was still communist. You know, he and his family had to escape. He has a very strong sense of, you know, his personal freedoms. So he kind of uses that to cook something random that's whatever he wants.
What does that mean? What's an example?
He'll, you know, go hunting and shoot a wild boar and be like, I'm going to do a, you know, boar roast this year. And he'll get like an immersion circulator because he hears it's cool. And he's like, oh, you know, circulate a boar. And it's like, all right. So there's always like, my sister is very much a romantic traditionalist and she does most of the cooking. So it's usually like a roast turkey, some Brussels sprouts and cranberry sauce and all these things you'd expect during kind of a Thanksgiving dinner. And then like a wild boar roast and some random fringe thing that my dad was responsible for. And I think the sort of drinking culture of restaurants in Eastern European countries sort of comes into play to a certain extent, too.
Oh, good. We can drink a lot at Jared's house.
Yeah, it usually ends up with sort of nightcap people showing up.
Annie, some time ago, and I don't know exactly when, Martha Stewart magazine talked about you at Thanksgiving time. And this is what the magazine said. For Atlanta chef Annie Quattrano and her husband Cliff Harrison, the Thanksgiving meal is a chance to throw open the gates of their farm to a few dozen family members, friends, colleagues, and newcomers. Their style of Southern hospitality includes casual surroundings, haute home cooking, good company, and one seriously flavorful fest. Is that about sum up what it's like at your house at Thanksgiving time?
I guess. I mean,
exactly as you would have said.
I mean, we always open the door. I mean, in our business, and I think Jared and Stephen know this, a lot of people end up because we're slave drivers, kind of, and we make people work over the holidays. But often people end up without a place to go. So we always say, whoever wants to come, come. And we actually never. I mean, I honestly don't think I ever have any idea how many people will show or not show. It's just one of those things.
So what are you cooking this Thanksgiving?
You know, I cook the same thing every Thanksgiving, and we also cook it for other people. So because at Star Provisions we prepare a lot of the sides and sell them, and by the time we all sit down to eat them on Thursday, they really aren't always as wonderful as we remember them because we've already made 200 pounds of dressing and 5 gallons of gravy. But we do very traditional. We do two birds. We always do one that's an organic bird, which is a little more traditional, and then we always get a heritage or a wild, something interesting. We brine them. Right now we're into dry brines. We have gone the gamut there. We do a dressing that's very simple. It's our sourdough bread with apples and dried cranberries and lots of celery and onion and lots of butter and sage. Sweet potatoes with some sort of a marshmallow topping and mashed potatoes, Brussels sprouts, root vegetables. Oh, and we always have buttered rutabagas because I love the buttered rutabagas that Mrs. Carver used to make. Do you remember this,
Stephen? Yeah, who's Mrs. Carver?
At Carver's.
At Carver's, yeah. That little, it's not there now, is
R.I.P.
it?
R.I.P.
Well, it's really close to you.
Did she
to where
put a
you
little
are.
Like nutmeg on them or something?
Yeah, it was just nutmeg and butter. Yeah. Just nutmeg and butter. And just, I mean, just really boiled rutabaga, but I love them. Yeah. And then my father always had this penchant for creamed onions, which is really our least selling item and always what we have left. But we always put it on the table in deference to him and his.
So do the star provisions guests get the same Thanksgiving that
exactly
you're having?
Exactly the same.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's a pretty big treat.
And truth be told, nice. I really, you know, I mean,
I
make
that phone number.
Yeah, well, let me say, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we will post on our website at gpb.org/TWS information about all of your operations. In your case, Sarah, we'll have you're going to be still taking orders for pies and other pastries. Annie, I assume people can order from you as well, and they can learn, although you're not doing catering, right, for Thanksgiving.
No, sir.
But they can learn. But we'll post a link to your restaurant and to Eat Me, Speak Me, Jarrett Sieber. Yeah. All right, so go back a step. Mm-hmm. Will I notice a difference? What's the difference between a store processed turkey, whatever it's called, and a heritage bird, for example.
Yeah, the heritage have they're a smaller breast bird, but they're really flavorful, and the meat is almost, it's like dark meat all the way through.
Yeah.
Like you don't get a big breast and a big, but it's the flavor is night and day. Yeah,
really,
and it's not
and
for
also
everybody.
Just the way that the birds are raised, you know, is important.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I can't speak to, you know, factory-raised turkeys because I haven't visited one.
Sure.
But I would imagine it's not the most appealing conditions.
Yeah, right.
So, and turkeys are really meant to be outside, just like any other bird, and roam around and you know, get their weight on naturally. So it makes the flavor better.
Where can people who have still not purchased their Thanksgiving turkey, where do you go to buy
Star Provisions.
Oh, you sell the turkey
itself.
We do
sell
the
turkeys. Yeah, we do still have. And White Oak Pasture has a great heritage bird right now.
And I think you can still order from them.
Yeah, you can order from them. And Whole Foods has, I think, the heritage birds as well. Yeah, but White Oaks are great this year. I've seen them. They look really good.
Brining the turkey. You talk about dry as opposed to a wet brine. Are you a briner?
Yeah, definitely.
Why?
It makes it more flavorful. It makes it juicier.
Yeah.
It gives you a little more flexibility, too, especially as a home cook. You're not, if you haven't cooked a turkey before, you don't know what you're doing. You might be able to overcook it a little bit and still not totally hammer it. But it just adds a lot more flavor overall, and especially to the parts like breasts that don't have, you know, intermuscular fat like a steak or something.
And what's the difference between dry? Why dry? I think about people who use the wet brine, but what's a dry brine?
It's really just salt, sometimes a little bit of sugar and herbs is what we do. So right now we're doing some warm spices and that. We went with the wet brine for many, many years, and I don't know, I felt like it was changing the texture a
little
bit.
That's what I think. Well, wet brine changes the texture of the meat.
Mm-hmm. Well, it absolutely does, because the salt that's in the water through osmosis makes its way into the muscle protein, and then the protein strands unwind because of the change that's happening on a molecular level. So it does change the texture. Most people think it's for the better because it makes it juicier, but it can make it kind of watery,
too.
And so that's the thing. You have to really think about, you know, you have to let it rest a good bit before you cut it, or else all that water is just going to come out when you cut it while it's still hot.
We have to take a break in a second, but very quickly, Annie, if I do a dry brine, how long? What do I?
It depends on the size of the bird, but I would say at least 24 hours for, you know, a 16 to 20 pound bird.
Do you rub the inside of the cavity too?
Yeah, inside and outside. But then we do rinse it at the end. Okay. So we let it sit for 24 hours.
Sarah,
so it's really like curing.
Kind of,
a short cure.
Yeah.
I assume it's in the refrigerator while this is happening. Yeah. Okay, just want to make sure. Sarah, do you mind, before we take a break, you have a turkey waiting for you in your freezer, and it's been there a while.
A heritage turkey.
I have it's a White Oak Pastures turkey. It's been in my freezer for a year.
Why?
Because I was supposed to, I was due to have a baby in early December last year, and the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, while I was at the bakery making pie, my water broke, and I called my sister and said, I'm going to need you to go ahead and put that turkey in the freezer. So we still have it, and I'm going to make it this year. I was asking these guys if I should brine it and if it's still going to be good. So we're going to try.
So not only is it a Thanksgiving turkey, but it's a birthday turkey, yeah, obviously.
It is Molly's birthday turkey.
That's great. Let's do this. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about Thanksgiving with some of the finest chefs you could possibly want to gather in one room. You're listening to Two-Way Street. Welcome back to Two-Way Street. We're talking with some of the finest chefs in the Southeast about Thanksgiving. Jarrett Stieber is from Eat Me, Speak Me. He's become known as the pop-up king of Atlanta. We might ask him about why that is at some point. Sarah O'Brien is a pastry chef and a pie. And do you cakes as well?
Not many.
Not really,
no,
right?
More tarts.
Okay, at Little Tart Bake Shop. Annie Quattrano is Bacchanalia, Star Provisions, Float Away Cafe, some of the finest restaurants in Atlanta. And Stephen Satterfield has Miller Union. Stephen, I want to talk to you for a second about something Marie Nygren down at Serenby wrote about you. This is already a few years ago, but you went down there to work on a menu with her, I think. Mm-hmm. And here's what she wrote. Stephen's menu included wonderfully savory flavors one associates with autumn. Grilled pork tenderloin with an apple cider vinegar basting sauce, roasted butternut squash and apples, farro and roots, bean salad and vinaigrette, field peas and Roma beans, a crispy salad tossed with a tangy Dijon mustard, champagne vinegar, ginger root dressing, griddled pastured chicken, sweet potato and sunchoke salad and roasted peppers and eggplant soup. I don't know if that was actually a Thanksgiving meal. It was a fall meal.
It was a fall meal, yeah.
Wow. I got hungry just listening to that. Just you always, always elevate vegetables. Your cookbook is all about using every part of every vegetable you come into contact with. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm a big seasonal proponent. So I really have put a lot of focus on watching what farmers are harvesting and making notes about what comes in at certain times of the year. And I've found also it's interesting to see that my notes don't always add up from year to year because everything changes every year when it comes in. But I'm you know, Root to Leaf is the name of my book. It's all about cooking with fruits and vegetables through the seasons. One of my big things for this time of year is green tomatoes. A lot of our farmers still are able to grow tomatoes through October, sometimes even into November, but this is around the time where they start pulling their plants out of the ground because the first frost is on the way. And they have green tomatoes, unripe tomatoes on the plant, so they're often trying to sell them off at this time of year. And I have a recipe for a green tomato gratin, which is basically just sliced tomatoes that are layered in a casserole dish with a cream that's seasoned with thyme and celery, and it has breadcrumbs on top. Super simple and easy, and I always sort of promote that as a Southern Thanksgiving side because it helps support our farmers this time of year, and it's also really delicious and unique and different and very Southern. And that recipe is in Root to Leaf, by the way. And I also do a cranberry sauce that's made with persimmons. So instead of using a lot of sugar, because cranberries are so tart, I'll use overripe persimmons that are very, very sweet and sugary and use that as some of the sugar and some of the texture and then just use a small amount of sugar to sweeten it the rest of the way.
One of the things that we like in our house about your cookbook is that we can actually make the recipes in your cookbook.
Well, I think the whole idea of the book was really just to kind of usher in some easy, simple recipes that people could kind of adapt and maybe change their repertoire a little bit. Everybody gets in a vegetable rut. I mean, even I do. And, you know, you have to kind of think outside the box sometimes. I'm always tinkering and exploring different ways to express vegetables. And then I'd like to share, you know, some of that stuff that I've learned, some of the simpler techniques to the home cook.
I, growing up, thought of vegetables as, you know, second and third place. It was meat, a potato, and then, oh, yeah, some broccoli. That's changed.
Well, and that's the way I was raised, too. And it's funny, I was always such a picky eater when I was young. And when I started learning how to cook and how to cook vegetables, I realized, you know, that they could be really great. And so many of the experiences that I had were, you know, overcooked, mushy messes that just didn't represent them very well. Like, I remember just discovering Brussels sprouts for the first time as an adult. I had never eaten them as a child. I thought they were disgusting. And when you cook them properly, they're really fantastic. It's one of my favorite vegetables. I love serving them in the fall. We always have them on our Thanksgiving table. And
did you tell an interviewer at some point that Brussels sprouts, that your grandmother hated Brussels sprouts?
My aunt hated them. She came into the restaurant and she said, "Everything looks good on this menu except for these Brussels sprouts." And I promptly sent her aside. And I was like, "You're going to try these." And she loved them. She was like, "I can't believe how good these are."
All right, give us a quick recipe for Brussels sprouts.
It's super easy. I just trim off the base and cut them in half or quarters if they're large. And then I toss them with salt, a little bit of pepper, thinly sliced shallots and garlic, and extra virgin olive oil.
The Brussels sprouts, do you take off the outer leaves that are kind of curled up and stuff, or do you just pop the whole thing in?
If they're, like, weathered or browning, yes. But otherwise, those are the best part. Like, when you toss them around and the random leaves that do fall off and get caramelized in the oven, that's, like, my favorite part, like the crispy brown pieces.
Yeah, they're, like, eating, like, gift wrapping paper.
How do you cook them?
Similar way, yeah. I mean, I like to just cut them down the middle once or twice, depending on thickness. And usually when you kind of trim the little root off, if there's any leaves that seem to desperately not want to be a part of the whole process, they sort of get rid of themselves during the destemming. And you just, you can either roast them, or a lot of times, without knowing what our final menu is going to be, I'll just kind of parblanch things and have them ready to essentially just sear on the flat top.
And Annie, you've been a proponent of locally sourced fruits and vegetables for many years. That's been one of the hallmarks of who you are. Talk about that for us.
Yes, when you say many years, it just makes me feel so old.
Sorry.
That's okay.
No, but one of the first.
Yeah.
I think that's what
Steven, thanks for reinforcing.
One of the first, let me say it that way.
Thank you. Well, you know, when we moved here, and I had been in San Francisco for a few years, and that was really in the early 80s, it was when everything was going crazy with the local cuisine and Alice Waters and Joyce Goldstein, and I worked for Judy Rogers at Zuni, and that's what we did. We used what came in the door, and we really loved that idea. And we moved to New York, and it was so different there. It was almost like the more rare or difficult to get, or the further an ingredient came from, the more specialized it was. And that's what was on the fine dining menu. So people wanted little tiny alpine strawberries in the winter, or white asparagus in the winter. And that was like, whoa, we have this. It didn't make any sense to me. So when we moved down here, and we had almost, and we do, we have a four-season growing season here, right? We can grow all year round. We're like, why aren't more people bringing produce to us? And I think when we opened, there was really only one local grower that brought us produce, and really all they brought was lettuce. So we started to grow. You know, we had no idea what we were doing, but we started to grow on our farm, and that was our intent. But it just slowly, people started bringing produce. And I think, you know, it was what we wanted to do, and certainly our goal always was to have a lot of options. But really all it takes for any of us to promote a movement like that is to purchase their products because you've got to buy it so they can grow more, stay in business. What do they say? You got to eat it to save it. Yeah, you've got to buy it to save it. So I think really just by putting our money into local, I think we slowly but surely changed a lot of that in Atlanta.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. So you already mentioned, speaking of vegetables, rutabaga. Would you mind sharing that recipe? And first of all, rutabaga, do you all cook with rutabaga?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
do? I heard you say. Okay, so.
And I saw that one of our farmers sent a list this week, and it had rutabagas on it, and I was excited.
Yeah.
I don't know much about rutabaga. Tell us, and I bet you a lot of our listeners don't.
Well, the rutabagas we get now from our local are really different than usually what you used to get were these great huge
globes,
and they were waxed on the outside because they were, I mean, I guess nobody ever ate them, so they sat around for they must have had to wax them to keep them fresh, but they were sealed in wax. But we just take the rutabagas and we peel them, and they often have a pretty thick skin on them, which is not so palatable, and we peel them, dice them, just blanch them, and then we toss them in butter. It's that simple. Yeah. And then a little bit of shaved nutmeg at the end. That's how I like to eat them. But you can puree. You can do anything. You can roast them, puree them. We salt roasted them one year. I think maybe Jarrett was there. We'd take the whole rutabaga and salt roasted at Abattoir. It was delicious.
That sounds good, yeah. It's a cross between a cabbage and a turnip.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's got a yellow flesh, and it's really sweet.
So do you all use farmers markets? Is that where you buy? Sorry, you're nodding very quickly. Is that where you buy your produce?
I go through the turnip truck for a lot of my stuff, which is a supplier, great company, great guys that go around to the farmers and send a list to us, and then I get most of my stuff from there.
So if you're in the business, you go to that. But can our listeners buy from them too?
No, but okay. You can find a lot of, like, they have, I'm getting apples from Mercier Orchards, and that you can get those at the farmers market, at Grant Park Farmers Market.
And
those are the
Freedom
apples going in, and at Freedom, yeah, at Freedom. At all of the, I think they're at Peachtree Road too.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them.
Yeah,
now.
So you can get a lot. I mean, the farmers markets in Atlanta are stunning and go through December. And you can, I mean, that's where we buy for my family. We buy all of our vegetables.
Yeah, Jared, we've run into you at the farmers market over at the Jimmy Carter Center a few times. You seem to do a lot of your cooking based on what's available there. So will you be there this weekend looking for things that you can add to your Thanksgiving menu?
Yeah. Well, I'll be there on Saturday morning. I usually, Woodland Gardens, one of the bigger farms that's there, and they send availabilities to the restaurants twice a week, which is a little more than some of the other smaller farmers do. They'll send us a list for delivery on Wednesday. It comes to the restaurants, and then on Saturday, you can go pick up to an order from them at Freedom Center. They'll drop off to a couple other restaurants later in the day Saturday. So it's not so much that I'm going to be there walking around the farmer's market looking for inspiration for that night, because we still need to menu plan and prep, and there's the behind the scenes stuff that kind of takes the magic and romance out of it from what people think. Oh, you're, you know, locally sourcing your stuff, so you just show up and buy whatever's there and come back. It's like, well, the farmers definitely don't want that, because they want to charge retail price, not wholesale, to everyone there. And so it's not quite so simple, but I do pick up an order, and if we're running low on something, like, oh, maybe I need to find another 3 or 4 pounds of eggplant just to get over the hump, you know, we kind of look around for that.
All right, while we're talking to you, give us a recipe for Thanksgiving. Pick anything you want.
I usually do cranberry sauce. That's generally the only thing I have to do anymore. When I was younger in my cooking career and not working quite the same hours that I do now, it was usually like, oh, help us cook dinner. Why don't you do a bunch of stuff and we'll help you out? And now I think my family's just kind of stopped asking me to do stuff. They're like, why don't you just come over and relax for a little bit? And my sister likes to cook, so I'm usually just responsible for cranberry sauce. And we do ours in kind of a different way. We'll usually have it on the Eat Me, Speak Me menu around Thanksgiving time, too. We'll take the fresh cranberries and cook them down with whatever kind of end-of-the-season summer chilies we have. We'll usually use the butts with the seeds, the spicier part. So we'll slice them fresh for a different dish and then save kind of the hotter part for hot sauce or whatever. So we'll put a couple chilies in with the cranberries and some garlic and ginger. We usually make vinegar with a lot of leftover stuff. Right now we have a bunch of pear vinegar and apple vinegar, so you can use, you know,
that's
whatever.
Fascinating. You talked about cranberry sauce too. I think of cranberry sauce as being kind of sweet and syrupy, and this is
yeah,
a completely
usually
different
is.
Approach.
Yeah, and mine's got a, it's, I like to hold on to the tartness, and
yeah,
I do a little allspice and persimmon and ginger in mine.
Sarah, you're cooking dinner as well as doing the pastries and the desserts. You have anything you want to share with me? You got a recipe? What are you
in the
do?
Weeds?
What's one of the items you're gonna cook? Give us something that our listeners should think about this Thanksgiving.
Well, I feel like the one thing people ask me about the most is pie crust and what they can do to make a better pie crust, because it seems to be very intimidating to a lot of home bakers. And I always tell people they need to let it. I mean, our crust to back up is flour, water, salt, and butter. That's it. I don't even put any sugar in my pie crust. And I always tell people that they need to let it rest. They need to, in between the steps, they need to work really cold. Atlanta Magazine actually last year published my pie crust recipe, if anybody wants to look it up. But you've got to, I talk about in that you need to let it rest, keep everything cold. And then one major mistake people make is when they roll it, they don't roll it large enough, and then they stretch it to try to fit it in the pie pan. And you can't stretch pie dough. You have to roll it nice and big and kind of ease it into your pan and then chill it before you either, you know, pre-bake it for a pecan pie, but or, you know, just chill it before you put apples in it for
apple
pie.
What's the pie? Give us something to fill it with.
We're at the bakery right now. We're making my favorite pecan pie. It has Pearson pecans, which are the best pecans
They're
ever.
They're amazing.
They're so good. Yeah.
Wait,
they're from
what are they?
The Elliott ones.
The Elliott pecans from Pearson pecans.
Pearson is the name of a
farm.
Farm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in Georgia.
In South Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're okay. Familiar with the peaches,
they're
probably.
They're in middle Georgia.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So those pecans almost need very little else, but they're so delicious. But we do some maple, the dark amber maple. We do some bourbon, you know, and then a little bit of orange zest. And then some Malden salt on top. And that was my attempt to come up with a pecan pie that wasn't overly sweet.
What's on the top of it?
Malden salt. So like
it's a flaky sea salt.
Yeah.
Everybody listening should go get a box.
Get a big box of
finish
Malden.
Finish all your home cooking with a little pinch of it.
And what is it about that salt?
You don't need us.
Jared, what is it about that salt?
It's a great clean salt flavor, you know, like iodized salt or something can actually taste kind of too salty. Malden's just really nice quality. It has a good flake to it.
Right. It's like a finishing salt.
Yeah, it's a
right.
finishing
to be
salt.
Sure, this yeah. is not what you cook with. This mm-hmm. is it's not when it yeah. calls just, for a teaspoon of salt. You use.
It's a crunchy, salty moment in your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It'll bring great. Whatever flavors you worked hard to put
right,
into
it's
the
delicate.
Food. It'll bring it out.
Yeah.
You know what? When you talked about baking, I thought of something I read about you that I thought was great. You were asked... I think for the Southern Foodways Alliance, maybe, what your favorite Southern food memory was. Do you remember what this is?
Gosh, I have no idea what I
you
said.
you said watching my grandmother make biscuits from scratch on her kitchen counter without a recipe or measuring cups and using a juice glass to punch them out, spreading softened butter and home-canned strawberry preserves across the hot biscuits, sliced and still steaming from the hot oven.
That brings back some memories. I also found out that my... later in life that my grandmother never let anybody help her in the kitchen. I just started doing it and she never told me no. But I found out later that none of her kids were ever allowed to help her, and for some reason she let me help her.
Wow.
And so I guess she saw something in me, my brazenness to jump in there without asking.
That's how I've gotten every job I've ever had. I've never looked for job openings. I'm always just like, hey, this is where I want to work next. And then you go there and just get a job.
Let's take another quick break. This is Two-Way Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Two-Way Street. We're talking about Thanksgiving, our annual Thanksgiving show with some of the best chefs in the Southeast. Jarrett Sieber is here. He's Eat Me, Speak Me, Sarah O'Brien, Little Tart Bake Shop, Annie Quattrano, Bacchanalia, among other fine restaurants here, and Stephen Satterfield, Miller Union. Okay, we put off really the big show of a Thanksgiving dinner till the end. Stephen, you talked about preparing your turkey by deep frying it. You don't roast it anymore.
I don't, and this is kind of a new thing for me. In the past few years, I fried one for the first time, and I love it. It's just so simple and easy, and I mean, obviously, you have to be very careful, and everybody's seen those YouTube videos.
Yeah, do it outside.
Somebody that didn't plan ahead, and they put a frozen turkey in the deep fryer, and it explodes. If you haven't seen that, you should Google it. But basically, I do a wet brine on the turkey because I think it's good to have a little extra moisture for the frying oil. I just do salt and water, nothing else. And then I do it completely naked, just drop it into good quality oil. We get some expeller pressed canola oil and just fry it. It only takes a little less than a half an hour.
For what size turkey?
Well, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the size matters a little bit, but because you're submerging it in the oil gets inside the cavity too, so it cooks from the outside and the inside at the same time, and that's why it's so quick. And lately, actually, the last year, I separated the breast and the dark meat. I left the dark meat in longer, and I liked it better. It was crispier on the outside and a little more tender in the middle. And then my brother-in-law makes a smoked turkey. And then that frees up the oven for all the vegetable sides to happen and get rewarmed or whatever, or, you know, someone's finishing their pie. And like I said, now our Thanksgiving is very collaborative and there's a lot of different contributions. But we've gotten into this tradition of one turkey smoked, one's fried, and then everybody gets a little bit of both. And it's a lot of different flavor profile, you know, going on. It's nice.
Annie, could you just, you talked about dry brining, but could you just take us through the process for your turkey?
Yeah, we dry, so we rub it with, we usually try to do pretty big ones in case a lot of people show up. We do a couple of big turkeys. So we dry brine them for 24 hours with mostly a salt rub, and then we roast them.
And you use kosher salt, right?
Yeah, kosher salt. So I put a little sugar in it, because not the malt in it.
Do you do white sugar or brown sugar?
Brown sugar. Mm-hmm. And a little aromatic. So like right now, it's just like thyme, a little bit of nutmeg. It's not like a sweet, sugary situation. I think a little bit of sugar in that brine, though, helps the whole browning process. And we roast them. We've fried them before. But, you know, we live on a farm, but there's that issue of what to do with the oil. I know that sounds freakish, but I'm always thinking like, okay, how am I going to clean this here? Yeah. So now we roast them. We roast them.
All right. Stuffing ever in the cavity of the bird?
I don't anymore.
No.
Mm-hmm. I don't do it.
Sarah, we're going to go around. What are you going to do with this year-old frozen turkey?
good question. I'm gathering ideas from y'all, but I'm definitely going to put it in the fridge like tomorrow so it can defrost. But I cook these past few years since I've had Little Tart. I've cooked at the bakery because I have two full ovens there and I can actually spread out, and I've kind of lost the ability to cook a lot of food in my home kitchen because I'm spoiled. So I'll probably have the turkey in one oven and then do all my veggies in the other oven.
Right. So Jarrett, let me ask you a little bit different question about that. I think I'm right that there are different ideas now about the temperature at which you cook any kind of poultry. So in a chicken, some people now say, hey, put the oven up to like 400 degrees, something like that. Do you do that sort of thing?
Yeah, you know, I actually prefer higher temperature cooking most of the time, just sort of in general. There's, you know, a lot of sous vide-ing and slower process cooking going on now, and it's not as much what we do. Generally, what I do with the turkey is I'll just butcher the legs off and cook them separately. From the breast, it's totally fine to, you know, roast the whole bird, and that's very traditional, and I get that. I'd probably start a little lower and then towards the end turn the heat up so you get the little crispy skin on the oven. But I personally really like the legs braised So we'll just, and it's what we do with our chicken.
You like the legs too. Braised.
I like them braised, yeah. So we'll just season it with the turkey, since it's a little thicker. It might need kind of the dry cure, like what Annie does overnight. But with chicken, I'll just take thighs or drumsticks and season them really heavily with salt and sugar. And we save all of our braising liquid. We call it the infinity stock. So we have like a chicken one, we have a beef one, we have a pork one. And we take some of it's always in the freezer. So it's either cooking stuff in the oven where it's too hot for bacteria, or then we take it out of the oven, shock it immediately with ice water, and then put it in the freezer. And then put it in the freezer and thaw it out as needed. So we have these, you know, stocks that have been going for years and years at this point. There's at least a little bit of the original batch and all of it, like minestrone or something like that.
Okay.
So we'll braise the legs.
All right. I got to ask you one last cooking question because we're running out of time. Let's do a round. Do you mind, real quick, stuffing?
Well, I prefer dressing. I'm from the South, and cornbread dressing is the way that I go.
You're right. I'm a Chicagoan. What do I know?
You know, I was on the Martha Stewart show, and I corrected her. She kept calling it stuffing, and we were making dressing, and I actually got a chance to correct her. It was pretty fun.
Very exciting.
It was a Thanksgiving episode.
So what's in your dressing?
She's going to serve it with Pepsi.
Cornbread,
next.
Onions, celery, pecans, sage, thyme.
Traditional.
Yeah.
Yours too, Annie?
Yep, traditional. Sourdough bread's the only difference, yeah.
Does that make it a little more tart?
It's just what we have the most of, I guess. but yes.
Jared, well, that's traditional to where you're from.
Yeah, I think my sister always does it. She uses cornbread. I'd prefer it probably with sourdough because I think the cornbread's already usually pretty dry and you can run the risk of a really dry final product.
How about eggs? Does anybody put eggs
in
there?
Yes, I put eggs in mine.
Yeah. And I put a little sausage in. I like browning
sausage.
Yeah, I
love the sausage.
Yeah,
the
sausage.
But then you have the vegetarians you have to worry about.
Yeah.
Sausage on
not
the
in
side.
My family.
I never know who's coming. So.
We are completely out of time. It's been a real pleasure to have all of you here. Annie Quattrano, thank you. Stephen Satterfield, Sarah O'Brien, Jarrett Stieber. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving. And I appreciate your sharing your thoughts about Thanksgiving with us today. We have lots of additional content about today's show posted on the Two Way Street website and on our Facebook page. You'll find links to our guests' restaurants. There's a link to Annie Quattrano's Star Provisions, where there's still time to order for Thanksgiving, and a link to Little Tart Bake Shop, where you can look over the holiday desserts. Plus, each of our guests sent us a recipe that you can try out for your Thanksgiving table. Just go to gpb.org/TWS. Now that you've heard ideas about preparing the Thanksgiving dinner, what the heck are you going to do with the leftovers? A few Thanksgivings ago, senior producer Jenny Ament asked that question, and the answers are still relevant today.
What am I going to do with my Thanksgiving leftovers this year?
I'm going to make turkey wild rice soup.
Turkey ready, gobble, gobble.
Give it away to people who don't have or who need, so.
We are just going to reheat them all and eat them.
I'm going to eat them.
For dinner tonight.
Share it with my dogs, me and my dogs.
Eat them all.
Eat them.
Can't waste anything.
Make sandwiches and soups.
I'm going to eat my mom's hamburgers.
We're going to have pumpkin pie.
We're going to have pecan pie.
I'm actually going to make a turkey gumbo.
Well, I was thinking of giving some to my friends.
The rest of the stuff I'll eat over the next week. I'll probably freeze some of it for later.
Eat them while I can because, you know, the whole college thing, the food's not good, so you got to get that good home-cooked meal as long as you can.
Thinking about maybe putting them in a calzone. Turkey and dressing with gravy, I did it last year, it's pretty tasty.
That's going to be my dinner, lunch.
Feast on them for a week.
I had a 12-pound turkey for two people, so got some leftovers.
That's all the time we have for this week's show. As Thanksgiving approaches, I want to say that in addition to how grateful I am for my wonderful family, Janice, Bill, Emma, Max, and Frida, I'm also thankful to the people I work with here at GPB. The always astonishing Jenny Ament, our dedicated interns, James Rising and Robert Jameson, our Vice President of Radio, Tanya Ott, and our Program Director, Ellen Reinhardt. I hope you all have a happy Thanksgiving. And please, when you sit down at the table, don't argue about politics. I'm Bill Nygut. See you again next week.